I love this series that you guys have been in this summer, Turning the Gem. This idea that scripture is this one true, real, valuable thing, but that it has facets to it, and that when we examine it and see it from a different perspective, we appreciate it more, and we see it in a new way. I love that. I've had that happen to me. I've had Turning the Gem moments, which is why I was so excited that I get to be part of this series here with you guys this summer. Like Kelly said, I'm not from Harbor. I'm from a church in New Hampshire, Manchester Christian. My name's Johanna. I'm a New Hampshire girl. I was born and raised there. I'm from the state of New Hampshire, but I have Jesus in my heart, which is why I love people from Massachusetts. So I'm so glad I'm here with you guys. I actually really genuinely do. My sister and I were recently getting in this argument. We're siblings, so we argue about nothing. But we were ranking New England states, like what our favorites were. And we put New Hampshire first, obviously. Home state, you have to. Then she put Maine as her favorite, second favorite New England state. I'm like, nah. I put Massachusetts as my second favorite because it really is. And I was thinking about that. I'm like, why? You know what? I actually think that Massachusetts is kind of like the heart of New England. Don't tell anyone in New Hampshire that I said that, but I really do. There's something about the state of Massachusetts. I don't know if it's like the history or the location. It's like the heart of New England. I feel like that is true about you guys. So I love that I get to be here with you. I love Massachusetts. I love New England. I love the church here. I grew up in the church in New England, which is kind of unusual for my peer group. A lot of people my age didn't, but I did. I never thought I would work at a church, though. I actually do now. I'm a family life director there. My training was actually to work in the medical field. That's what I did. So before I worked at MCC, I was a dialysis technician. So if you don't know what that is, dialysis is for people who are in kidney failure. So their kidneys don't work well or they're just lost function or whatever. They have to come get dialysis. So they have to get this treatment a couple of times a week that like does what their kidneys should do, where it like removes fluid and filters out the toxins from their blood. So that's what I did. I ran their dialysis treatment and I loved it. It was like really, really interesting job, really fascinating. I liked the medical side of it. What I also really liked is you got to know people, because this was an outpatient clinic, so it wasn't like people came once and then you never saw them again. They had to come like three times a week for like years, for as long as they needed the treatment. So you actually like connected with people and got to know them. And I had this one favorite patient, we'll call her Helen. She was this really elderly lady, really grouchy. She had this really like deep gravelly voice and she kind of had some dementia. So a lot of times she had no idea what was going on, but I just loved her. She was feisty and a character. And I was like really happy whenever Helen was on my team. She could never remember my name, Johanna. So she always called me Joni. Whenever she'd come in, Joni, like she'd come in and ask for stuff, Joni. Like I loved Helen. I don't know why. I just was happy when she was there. And there was this one day I never forgot was something that happened with Helen. And before I tell this story, if any of you in here are squeamish about blood, I will skip the gory details, okay? I don't mind making you guys uncomfortable, but I'm not trying to make anybody pass out, so you can relax. I'm not going to, like, get into the nasty stuff. But this one day with Helen, she was on my team that day. She was one of the patients that I was taking care of. And it was like lunchtime. So like everyone else had gone to lunch except for me and a couple other people. And we would have to do vital checks, like so go around, make sure everyone's still okay, check on their blood pressure and stuff. So I was doing that. I'm standing there and I'm doing like a blood pressure check. And I hear this noise from a corner. Johnny, help me. And I turn to look and there's Helen in her dialysis chair. She's holding her arm up and in her hand is her dialysis needle that she had pulled out of her arm. And she's holding it up in the air and it's just spraying blood all over. And I've never forgot what that felt like in that moment. I go into this immediate, like, save Helen mode. So I'm like running over to her, calling out to the other techs, like, because we've got to do something. Like, if we don't get to her and do something to stop this, like, she would die. I mean, that's what would happen if you lose all your blood. So like I'm running over to Helen, like she was fine. You guys, like Helen was fine. We got to her. We did what needed to be done to save her and all that. Like took a long time to clean her up. She wasn't even fazed by it. Didn't even bother her. But I've never forgotten that moment and what that felt like, because that was my first time realizing what it felt like to like have that urgency that like I have to do something to save this person, to rescue them, to stop them from dying. And the thing I've always come back and thought about in that moment is like, there's not much that could have distracted me right? Like, I was really focused on what needed to be done. And I wasn't stopping to chat with other patients along the way or, like, go fetch someone a pillow or something like that. Like, I needed to get to Helen and I needed to rescue her. Anything that stopped me would have had to have been equally important, like also a matter of life and death, which is why this story that we're going to be spending time in today amazes me and confused me at first. I had to have a turning the gem moment in this story because I didn't understand what Jesus was doing in this. So we're going to be spending time in Mark 5. So if you have Bibles, you can pull that out. And we'll look at that and read it together. If you have like a Bible app on your phone, pull that out and use it. We'll also have it up on screens and you can read along from that. We're gonna be reading that together. But before we do that, I just want to give you some context of what's actually happening here in this story. So it's in Mark 5. So it's early in Jesus' ministry. So he's kind of early on. He's been starting to go around and teach. And he has his disciples and his followers who've been going around with him. And he's been starting to go around and teach people. And word is starting to spread about Jesus. So people are starting to, like, in the towns and areas where he's going, have heard of him. Like, hey, there's this guy, Jesus from Nazareth, and he's teaching things that are changing people's lives, and he's doing things that other people can't do. And so what this means, with the word starting to spread about him, is that wherever Jesus goes at this point, crowds are gathering because people have heard of him. And that's where our story kind of picks up. Jesus had been in a different area. He got in a boat. He went to the other side of a lake. He got out, and immediately a crowd gathered around him because they're like, I've heard of this guy, and I want to hear what he has to say. Or maybe they had heard him teach before and wanted more, and they gathered around him. And in that crowd that gathered around him was a man named Jairus. Jairus was kind of an important man. He was a ruler of the synagogue. He was like a leader in that. And he comes up to Jesus and he like throws himself down at Jesus' feet. He's like, you have to help me. My daughter's dying. So Jairus had a 12-year-old daughter. She was really sick. Like, she was dying. So he throws himself at Jesus and is like, you have the power to heal her. You have to help me. Please come with me to come rescue my daughter. And Jesus is like, all right, let's go. Let's go rescue her. So he goes to go with Jairus. So that's where our story picks up. While Jesus is on his way to go rescue someone who's dying, something happens along the way. So that's where we're going to read. We're going to read this together in Mark 5, starting in verse 24. Jesus went with him, Jairus, and all the people followed, crowding around him. A woman in the crowd had suffered for 12 years with constant bleeding. She had suffered a great deal from many doctors, and over the years she had spent everything that she had to pay them, but she had gotten no better. In fact, she had gotten worse. She had heard about Jesus, so she came up behind him through the crowd and touched his robe. For she thought to herself, if I can just touch his robe, I will be healed. Immediately, the bleeding stopped, and she could feel in her body that she had been healed of her terrible condition. Jesus realized at once that healing power had gone out from him. So he turned around in the crowd and asked, who touched me? His disciples said to him, look at this crowd pressing around you. How can you ask who touched me? But he kept on looking around to see who had done it. Then the frightened woman, trembling at the realization of what had happened to her, came and fell to her knees in front of him and told him what she had done. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace. Your suffering is over. When we look at this story, when we really examine it, there's a few things that bothered me at first. There's a couple things that I'm like, all right, Jesus, I don't understand what you're doing. Have you ever felt that way? Like, you need to explain what you're doing here because it's not making sense to me at all. So I'm like, Jesus, why did you stop? Like, why stop? You're on your way to rescue someone who's dying. And it says it right there. This lady was right. As soon as she touched your robe, she got healed. She had immediate healing. So why did you stop? Like, it doesn't seem efficient to me, right? Like, that healing took place. On to the next one. Like, there's another healing that can happen. Why are you stopping? Why are you delaying? I don't understand that. And I'm also like, okay, Jesus, also, why are you embarrassing her? Like, why are you insisting on making it public? You know, a lot of time when Jesus healed people, he was like, don't tell anyone. You're all set. Just go ahead. Like, you're healed now. So he's not in it for the publicity. That's not why he's doing that. This lady, she was trying to just like sneak in and sneak out. And she would have made it. Jesus blew her cover. Nobody else noticed her. And he's the one who's like, no, this has to be a public thing. She's like, why is he doing it? It seemed almost like kind of embarrassing, like a little bit mean to her. Like, I don't understand why you're doing that. And I think in order for us to understand what Jesus is really doing, we have to realize the extent of the problem, what this lady was really living. See, we could have a tendency in our culture and time and the world we live in to hear that story and be like, wow, you know, that poor woman suffering for 12 years of constant bleeding, like what a terrible medical condition, and then leave it at that. What the Bible tells us, though, is that she actually suffered from 12 years of menstrual bleeding. Like, she had a period that didn't stop for 12 years. And if you're uncomfortable with me talking about that, it was way worse for her. Much worse in her context. Because in the Jewish society she lived in and the rules and laws she lived under, that meant for her that she had spent 12 years being labeled as unclean. 12 years where she bore this label that she was unclean. Because in their laws at the time, a woman who was on their period was unclean until she stopped. This lady didn't stop for 12 years. So that whole period of time, she's unclean. And what that meant for her daily life was that she wasn't allowed to touch another human being. She couldn't even touch their clothing, or she'd make them unclean. So nobody could touch her. She couldn't touch anyone else. She would have been a complete outcast from her family and her society. Desperately lonely. That was her life. Not only was she completely disconnected and had broken relationships with people around her, having that label of unclean meant that she couldn't approach the synagogue. Meant that she had heard for 12 years, stay away from God, you're too unclean for him. So her relationship with God was even broken. She heard, like, you're too much of a mess, you need to stay away from him until you can become clean. Then you could approach him again, but right now you stay away from him. And she was so desperate to get out of this situation, what is really to me like a living death. I cannot imagine living that way for 12 years. She had gone through all she had, all the money she had, all of her livelihood, desperate for a cure, desperate for healing, and she hadn't been able to get any. No doctors could help her. And I think we could have a temptation to read that and think, man, aren't you glad we don't do that anymore? I wish we didn't. The problem, our problem, this is the extent of our problem, that we still label people as unclean and isolate them. And the labels might be different. We may not do it to someone in her condition, what she's suffering from anymore, but there's so many different ways and labels that we give to people that are like unclean, and we just push them away and isolate them. And sometimes we do it to ourselves. We disconnect ourselves. We put that label on ourselves, like, I'm too ashamed of this. This is too much and too unclean, and I can't approach people or connect with other people while this is going on, so I'm not going to tell anyone, and we'll disconnect ourselves. Sometimes we do that to other people. Like, we put up a barrier to kind of protect ourselves. Like, I don't want them making me unclean. Like, I don't want that mess coming into my life and touching me. So we push other people away or put barriers between other people. And the thing that really breaks God's heart is that we sometimes believe that ourselves or about other people, that we can't even approach God with our mess, that we're too unclean to be in connection with him, that we need to get our act together and then come to him. But that's not what Jesus did. That's not what he said, and that's not the way he acted. So when we examine this, when we look at it, and we ask, why did you do what you did here? Help me understand this. Why did you stop? Why did you make it public? When we look at that, we see two healings that took place there. There's like a healing within a healing that happens. When Jesus says, I know you've been physically healed, but we're not going anywhere until you're completely restored to community. We're not going anywhere until your relationships have been healed. That's why he stopped. That's why he made it public. He wanted her restored to community. He wanted everybody to know she's clean now. She's been healed. She can be in community with you again. And he wasn't going anywhere until she had whole, complete healing. And it was that important to him, that urgent to him, that he stopped till she could be back with her society and back with her community. And if there's anything that I hope you guys remember and take away with you today, there's this one truth that I really hope you realize, is that Jesus wants to heal us relationally. He wants to do that in our life. When there's broken relationships, when there's disconnect or loneliness or isolation, he wants that restored in your life and the lives of the people around you. It's priority to him. He wants to take time for that. It matters to him. He wants you to be relying on one another, to be sharing life with each other, to have healthy relationships, to be in community. He values that. And when it's broken, he wants to heal it. It really matters. So how do we do that, right? Like, if Jesus wants that for us and he wants that lived out in our life, he wants us to experience that, how do we do it? I think we can look at the woman and a few other people in this story, and there's some ways that we can be like her so that we can live out relational healing in our life. So I think there's three ways that we can be like the woman. The first way is this: wait with hope. One of the most striking things in her story to me is that she had to wait for 12 years. Seems like a really long time. She had to wait and wait for healing, for health again, to be whole again. I don't know why she had to wait that long. I don't. Like, I wish she could have gotten healed sooner than that. I don't know why it took 12 years. And some of you are waiting. Like, you're just in a waiting period. You're waiting to try to reconnect with that family member that doesn't want to have anything to do with you. Or you're waiting for a loved one to be free of addiction. Or you're waiting for a child. You're waiting for your family to grow. Sometimes there's really good things, healing things that you're waiting for. And I don't know why you guys are having to wait. I don't. What I see from her is that in that waiting, she still had hope. And we can. We can wait with hope. She didn't give up. She didn't act like, it's never going to happen because it hasn't happened in so long. So wait with hope, because one thing I see in her story, she had 12 years of pain and isolation and brokenness, but then her story's been having an impact for 2,000 years. Like, there's 12 years of pain, and then there's like 2,000 years of impact, and that gives me hope in what we're waiting for, that God still does it, something with it. He still uses it. So wait with hope. The second way that we can be like the woman in this story: pursue healing. This will take action on your part. Pursue it. She didn't wait for Jesus to come to her or sit and be passive. Like, she walked to him. She went through the crowd. She grabbed at him. It takes action on our part. And I want to be clear on this. We don't have the power to heal ourselves. We don't have the power to heal our relationships. We don't have the power to heal the broken relationships of the people around us. But we can pursue the one who does. We can pursue Jesus. He has that power. That's what she did. She's like, I can't fix this. I don't have the power to. I'm going to pursue Jesus. He does. And we can pursue him. Now, I've had the privilege of seeing the journey of a dear friend of mine who has battled his way out of an addiction to pornography, which I think is one of the most common unclean labels in our society right now that disconnect people. And I've been able to watch and see his fight and his battle as he's pursued healing. And the thing that I really am amazed at in his story is that it's been a daily pursuit. Every day. He didn't have power to overcome it himself, to deal with it himself, but he's been pursuing Jesus every day, healing every day. It will take some action on your part. And there may be specific steps that you need to take. Maybe you need to be in a support group or join a group that will know you. Maybe you need to seek counseling. Maybe you need to be having some of those difficult conversations you've been putting off, but pursue healing, pursue the action it takes. Third way that we can be like the woman: share your story. You know, what I first took to be kind of Jesus embarrassing her a little bit, sometimes we feel that way, like, why are you doing this to me, Jesus? Like, this is embarrassing. Why would you put me in that situation? But I think what he actually does a lot of the time is give us an opportunity to share our story. And she had this chance, this opportunity for her story to be known. And I realize when I look at her, I'm like, man, that's true for us too. Like, if we'll allow our brokenness and our shame and our struggles to be known, then Jesus's healing can be celebrated. then it becomes a public thing where people are encouraged to know, like, healing is possible. We have to have the courage, though, to be like, here's me, like, this is my story, and let it be known. It took a lot of courage for her to say in front of all those people, like, yeah, here's me and what's going on in my life, and here's what you just did. But Jesus gives us that opportunity for our story to be known. I also think that we can look at the crowd. We look at the crowd around us, and here's the thing. Sometimes in Bible stories, we pick on the crowds. Like, they're such idiots. Why would they ever do that? And they do some silly, idiotic things because they're made up of people like you and me, right? Like, yes, I would have been right there with the disciples, like, rushing Jesus along. Like, come on, why are you stopping? Like, but the thing is, they are doing some things right that we can learn from. And the first thing, the first way we can be like the crowd is to follow Jesus. They got that right. They were in the right place at the right time. I love that about them. In fact, it says right there, like, when he got off the boat and they crowded around him, then Jesus went to go follow Jairus. And what does it say the crowd did? They followed him. They were just tagging along after Jesus. Like, they didn't know what he was going to do or what was going to happen next. They're just like, we're going to follow that guy. Like, we want to see what happens. And wherever Jesus goes and whatever he's doing, healing is happening there. So they positioned themselves to be a part of it just by following Jesus. See, because they were there, they were in proximity to him and they were following him, they got to be a part of the healing he was doing. So when this lady's relationships were restored, when she was given back to community, they were right there to be a part of that. They got to be a part of that healing. So follow Jesus. Second way that we can be like the crowd, don't let fear stop you. Don't let that slow you down or get in your way. You know, I think when we look at this crowd, they probably were her society, her group of people, because they were probably in proximity to her. And I don't think that they isolated her or pushed her out or made her an outcast because they just felt like being mean to her or just didn't like her. It was fear-based. A lot of the rules and laws of the time for them were based on them being afraid of what would happen to them and them being afraid of becoming unclean. But we can't let that stop us, because following Jesus will be scary, and he will lead you straight to the people who are the biggest messes, to the unclean people. So we can't let fear stop us from being in position like that to connect with people, to bring relational healing to people. So don't let fear get in your fear of people who are different from you or who have a mess going on in their life, some brokenness in their life, and the impact that could have on you. Follow Jesus anyway towards those people and be a part of them being restored. Don't let fear stop you. The third way we can be like the crowd: give people access to Jesus. I love this about them too. Like, they were crowding right up on Jesus. Like, when the disciples were saying, how can you ask who's touching you? Everyone is touching you right now. This whole crowd is so close to Jesus. Like, they were just right next to him, which I think is so cool. I love that. Like, crowd around Jesus all day long. Just make sure people are still getting access to him. Right? Like, are you so close to Jesus that you're elbowing other people away? Like, make sure when you're crowding up close to him, your family and your friends and your coworkers have access to him still. Is your, like, proximity to Jesus mean that the people in your life also are close to him and also have access to him? Because he's the source of the healing. So if you'll crowd up with him but still give the people in your life access to him, the way that this lady had to push through the crowd to get to him, make sure people still have access to Jesus through you in your life. Okay, now my favorite part of this story, my favorite, is that we get to be like Jesus. So not only can we look at the woman and look at the crowd and get examples from them of how we can have relational healing, how we can be that in our community, we actually get to be like Jesus. I think this is incredible. Like, this is exactly why God said, I'm going to come down and walk around as a human being, as a man on earth, so you have examples, so you know exactly who I am and how you can be like me. He's an approachable God like that. He gives us examples we can actually follow. Like, he went around all the time giving us examples of how we can interact with people in ways that we can actually do it. And sometimes he did stuff like walking on the water, which we probably don't try every day. But like, he gave us stuff that we can actually do. We actually get to be like him. And I don't want you to miss that, because he's what we get to be like in the way that he treated people, and the way that he talked to people, and the way that he restored people. So here are three ways that we get to be like Jesus. First way, take time for people. Jesus was so good at this. He never blew past people. He didn't rush and ignore people. I mean, he's on his way to save someone from dying, and he's like, this lady needs some of my time. And he stopped to give it to her. And honestly, this whole exchange with her, it probably only took a couple of minutes. Probably didn't even take very long, and it changed her entire life. We've got to be like him in this. We need to take time for people. And if there is one thing that I know about New England, all of the people around you, all the time that you are interacting with on a daily basis, they are crying out for connection and for restoration and for healing in their relationships. So many people around us are. Don't blow past them. Take time for people in your life. Take time to see them and connect with them and see where they are. You can be a part of restoring relationships in their life. So when you are in line at Dunkin's getting your iced coffee and you're late for work, just slow down and take time for the person who's there. The person who needs to know that Jesus wants to bring healing into their life, and you can actually be a part of that. Take time for your coworkers and for your family, for your friends. Take time for the people that God is placing around you, because it can definitely change their whole day, and it can sometimes even change their whole life the way that it did with this lady. So take time for people. The second way that we get to be like Jesus is restore people immediately. It's one of my favorite things about Jesus is when he decided to do something, it was done right then, right away. He did not waste time. And it's important to note, this woman actually had a process that she could have gone through, a ritual, to be declared clean. So after she was physically healed, it would have taken at least 7 days, but what she could have done was like wait a 7-day period, and then she had to bring some sacrifices to the synagogue, like 2 turtle doves or pigeons or something like that, and bring them before the religious leaders, and then she'd go through this whole process to prove that I'm clean now. Jesus is like, no, I'm not having that now, right now. You're being restored immediately. I'm making sure everybody knows right now that you are clean, that I have the power to do that, and you can be restored right now, today, this moment, right where you are. And the urgency behind that, we've got to have that to restore people immediately. Because when we feel that urgency, that people need it now, that means we'll be like, all right, we need to go to the one who has the power for that healing right now, when we feel that urgency. See, I work with kids and students, and I'm telling you, I promise you, there are more people walking around you who are isolated and lonely like this, who are depressed or struggling with even suicide, than we know. There's an urgency behind this that we can't miss. Jesus is like, you are not waiting. Restoration's happening now, immediately. And that urgency is something that we can own, that people need it right away. The third way that we get to be like Jesus, consider people family. Consider them your family. I want to go back for a minute to the last thing that Jesus said in here when he was speaking to the woman, directly to her. It's in verse 34. And he said to her, daughter, your faith has made you well. Go in peace, your suffering is over. I looked, and I couldn't find any other time that Jesus spoke directly to a woman and called her daughter. He did it there, and that word has significance, daughter. It's a Greek word, thugater, and it means, he's literally saying, you are a daughter of God. And that word, thugater, it actually means acceptable to God, rejoicing under God's unique care and protection. So when Jesus looked at her, and when he's talking to her, he's saying, not only is your suffering over, you can go in peace, you've been made well, you're my family. I accept you. You're acceptable to me. You're under my care and my protection because you're my family. That's what he declares over her publicly in front of everyone. And we get to do that too for people. See, if you're anything like me, for my friends, I will help you move. I'll go visit you in the hospital, whatever you need. For my family, I would die for you. When you consider someone your family, you love them differently. And we get to be like Jesus in that, where he's like, you may be a stranger, but you're my family. And you may be a coworker I can't stand, but you're my family. You may be a family member I wish wasn't in my family, but you're my family. And it changes how you love them. We get to do that. Jesus invites us to love people that way because he calls her daughter the same way that he makes us a part of his family. So we can consider people family. Because it's so important to Jesus and a priority to him that we are a part of relational healing, our own in our lives and in the lives of the people around us. And that's what I hope you guys remember from this. Because it has implications in your day-to-day life. It's not just something we talk about in a Bible story. It changes how you interact with people as you go from here and how you see people, how you view them. And Jesus wants that for us so much. And he's not only the source of that power, he's extending it to you to impact your communities. He wants that for this church. He wants that for your families, for your workplaces, your schools, this community, this region. Like, he wants you to be going out and bringing that relational healing. I'm so excited for the impact you guys can have when you do that, when he does that in your life and restores the healing you need, and when you then can carry that out into your communities in your area. I'm going to pray that over you guys as we then continue in worship. Jesus, we love you and love who you are. I thank you so much for the care that you give us, for the healing that you bring us, for the example that you are, that we can actually follow and be like. Lord, I pray over each one of us here. You see each broken relationship. You see each area of restoration and healing that's needed, and you care about it, and you want that for them. So, Lord, I pray your power and your love over them, that that would be something that they experience in their life and something that extends to the people around them. God, we thank you for who you are, for what you do in our lives and in our stories. We love you. We pray this in your name. Amen.